Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. Women's bodies are highly policed in today's society. Pregnant women's bodies are even more policed. Longtime African-American model Beverly Johnson revealed this week in her biography how she once took drugs while she was pregnant. She also lost custody of her daughter. We might jump to judge her because we're told by doctors, politicians, social workers, and others that everything you consume while pregnant can damage your child. In fact, prosecutors all over the country have targeted pregnant women who have taken drugs in the interest of protecting their fetuses. But what if the science of how drugs impact our bodies was not as solid as we might think? My guest is a pioneer in challenging what we know about drug use. Dr. Carl Hart is an associate professor of psychology at the Department of Psychology and Psychiatry at the University of Columbia. His book is called High Price, A Neuroscientist's Journey of Self-Discovery that challenges everything you know about drugs and society. Welcome to Uprising, Dr. Hart.
Thank you for having me, and I'm so excited to be on Progressive Radio, finally.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, this is such an important topic, and we're seeing today the criminalization of women and pregnant mothers at a very dangerous and alarming level. So how do you explain to the layperson, particularly, you know, a pregnant woman who might be listening now and who's hearing and kind of flabbergasted at the notion that if she takes drugs, it might not be as, you know, life, you know, horrible and impacting her baby's health for life as doctors have told her?
Well, I don't know which doctors are telling people that, but that's clearly medical malpractice because on the one hand, as a doctor, you certainly don't want to put your patients at risk. But by that same token, that doesn't give you a license to lie about the extent or the potential harms of using a drug or not exercising or eating too much sugar. All of these kinds of things we know are not necessarily the best for a developing fetus, but it doesn't mean that they will all ruin the fetus. And this is the case with drugs, whether we're talking about a drug like cocaine, caffeine, nicotine, methadone, heroin. All of these sorts of things we want to discourage people from doing when they're pregnant. But if they do it while they're pregnant, because oftentimes many women don't know they're pregnant in the first few months or so, and so certainly people use drugs unwittingly, if they actually do this, it doesn't mean that the child is doomed for life. In fact, that's a rare incident, and it requires the heaviest drug-using women while pregnant in order to see any of these sort of harmful effects that people have been warning against. But we've known this in medicine. This is not new.
And so how do you respond when you hear of prosecutors going after women who are pregnant and found to have been taking drugs, particularly poor women who in some states now are required to do drug testing of their urine before they can be eligible for state benefits?
Yeah, I'm glad you said poor women because this certainly does not happen to women of means. And how I respond is that it would be helpful if we were able to highlight, shine a light on this, publicize those prosecutors who are actually doing this and who are engaging in dishonest behavior, particularly if they are claiming these dire consequences. That's just simply not true. And so I would hope that we would publicize this so we can expose this inappropriate behavior.
And so then how do you explain the science? Because, you know, we are told that the placenta is extremely permeable. Everything you eat and drink, if you're around secondhand smoke, is, you know, essentially equivalent to your developing fetus engaging in those same behaviors. It impacts your brain, neurology, etc. I'm just paraphrasing what I've heard from the media, from doctors, etc. So how do you explain to the lay audience what happens when, say, a pregnant woman might smoke marijuana or a cigarette or or take other drugs, meth, for example?
Well, if a pregnant woman goes in the subway in New York City, particularly at 168th Street, you know, there are quite a few toxins that we all have to breathe there every day when we go to work. It's probably about the same as someone smoking tobacco, cigarette, These kinds of things, we don't, we want to minimize exposure to these things, but in some cases you can't. You just simply can't avoid exposure to these things. It doesn't mean that the fetus will somehow be harmful, certainly in perceptible or ways that we can actually see. We don't live in a perfect world. And so the notion that we can have a fetus develop in a perfect environment, it's just a pipe dream. I mean, obviously, we want to discourage unnecessary drug use. We want to discourage lack of exercising. We want to discourage too much sugar, poor dietary habits. We want to discourage all of these things while people are pregnant or in life in general. But it doesn't mean that we should have so severe consequences when these things, when our expectations are met. The consequences outweigh they are too harsh. They over estimated the harms associated with this.
Now, obviously, you are in a field that studies these issues, and your colleagues aren't speaking out as vociferously as you about these issues. How much responsibility do scientists bear in sort of not explaining clearly enough the dangers, or rather the lack of dangers of drugs?
Well, you say my colleagues are not speaking out. Well, we live in a country where we have racial discrimination, poverty, poor education, a wide range of problems which we all know, and most of us are not speaking out. Many of my colleagues are white, and they are from elite classes, and I am not. And I come from the hood, basically, shorthand. And I have to go back to the hood, and I am responsible to a large number of people. And I would be less than an adult, a responsible adult, if I didn't do my best to make sure that I represent those people and poor people all around the country, because I am not a part of the elite class. And so I have this added pressure, I feel like, in order to speak the truth or speak it as I say. And understand that it's not only about me or my sort of status among my colleagues, but it's about the broader range of American people. And so, in terms of what my colleagues do, I can't really control that. I can only control what I can do.
And then these perceptions have real life consequences on particularly women, but people in general who are fed into the system of into our criminal justice system and become part of this mass incarceration complex where such a large percentage of mostly black and brown folks are incarcerated for drug-related charges. And we're starting to now unpack that. We're starting to question those, the disparity that we see. But doesn't the perception of the impacts, the harmful impacts of drugs, really feed the system?
Yeah, I think so, but I just want to be clear, because when you say we're starting to kind of understand these racial disparities, these are not racial disparities. This is racial discrimination. And I mean, that's how these things happen. We have made explicit choices where we were going to put our law enforcement and so forth. We call that racial discrimination. And so when we think about what role drugs play and the perceptions of drugs play, drugs are just, or drug policy and drug enforcement just becomes another tool in this vast toolbox that the American people have had in order to further marginalize people in the society. And so drugs are not special. Drug policy isn't special in that regard. It's a tool, and we have a number of these tools. And one of the things that I'm trying to do is trying to take away that tool as a means to further marginalize people.
Do we over-criminalize drugs?
Of course, we overcriminalize drugs. I mean, we overcriminalize drugs. I mean, when we think about this, let's just think about this fact. The vast majority of people who use any drug, from heroin to marijuana to cocaine, 80, 90% of them don't have a problem. And the vast majority of them take care of their family, they go to work, they are responsible people in society. Now, we think about the last three presidents of the United States: Bill Clinton, George Bush, Barack Obama. All of these guys reported illegal drug use. Barack Obama, marijuana and cocaine. George Bush, marijuana, widely suspected of cocaine, although he hasn't been adult enough to admit it publicly. Bill Clinton, marijuana, of course. Now, you have all of these people in the country who use illegal drugs and throughout the country. Now, we don't overpenalize them because we like them, or there are certain types of people in our society we like. We only are harsh in our penalties with people who we don't like primarily. And those are the marginalized people in society. And so these drug policies and enforcement, just as I pointed out, continue to be used as a tool to make sure people know their place.
Right. Now, we are seeing a move to decriminalize marijuana in particular in several states around the country. The marijuana legalization movement has slowly gained steam. Some have argued that those people who've benefited from marijuana legalization have been the very people who were less likely to land in jail over the last 30 or so years of the war on drugs. But what do you make of this move to legalize this drug?
I think it's interesting. It's an interesting experiment. When we talk about legalization, not decriminalization, we're talking about legalization for recreational use for adults. I think it's an interesting experiment when you look at Alaska, Oregon, Colorado, and Washington. And I think we're watching to see how much revenue this generates, and see which we're trying to see a number of states are trying to see whether or not it's an approach that they should adopt. But it's one of these things that the time has come. This idea's time has come. I think that we should regulate all of these drugs and control the product. The major thing that I worry about as a scientist who studies these drugs, who have given thousands of doses of these drugs to people in the lab and carefully studied their response, my major concern is not with the drugs themselves. My major concern is with the adulterants, that is, the cuts that the drug dealers use in order to stretch their product. I'm more concerned about those adulterants. And one of the things that the legal regulated market would do is that it would get rid of that sort of concern. That's where the real dangers with drugs lie, not the actual use of drugs. We know they can potentially be dangerous. Like if you use marijuana, caffeine, or heroin or something, obviously they carry some potential harms. Just like driving your automobile carries some potential harm. Just like engaging in sexual behavior carries some potential harm. One way we deal with driving your automobile or sexual behavior is that we use education. We put in some safety nets to make sure that people, that we enhance the safety of these sorts of things. The same thing can be done with all of these drugs we're talking about. Trust me, I know, as I pointed out, we give these drugs on a daily basis, and we do so under the auspices of your tax dollars. The American public supports this every day, giving thousands of doses of these drugs to people. And we do this so we can provide information, so our country is less ignorant about drugs. The problem is, people just haven't read the past 30 years of research and work that we have produced showing that these drugs are not as dangerous as we have been told.
One of the ways in which drug use is used to criminalize people, particularly as we've seen over the last year when police brutality issues have come to the fore, is to, demonize drug users. Mike Brown's toxicology report, or Trayvon Martin's toxicology report, Sandra Bland's toxicology reports showing that there might have been drugs in their system. And this is often not necessarily being, not necessarily used in a court of law, although sometimes it is, but often even in the court of public opinion, when the issue of someone's drug use leads in the headline, almost as if to justify what police might have done to them. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I think that, that's one of the things that angers me more than anything. And I think oftentimes the people who are doing this are the district attorneys in those various regions. We think about Trayvon Martin, we think about Mike Brown, we think about Sandra Bland. The district attorney comes out and says that, oh, they had large amounts of marijuana in their system in these cases. And in every case, they were absolutely wrong. In each case, those people had the amount of marijuana that would be equivalent to like placebo.
Wow.
And I think those district attorneys should be fired or they should be jailed because that's the kind of irresponsible behavior that is allowed to go on in our country, and it perpetuates racial discrimination. And people don't call out those races. That's what they are, in my view. And so one of the things I think we should do also is that we should make it mandatory for folks when these district attorneys say these sorts of things, they should be required to release the toxicology at that moment. They never do. What they do is they wait several weeks later and then they release it. And then people like me, like I've written on Sandra Bland, I've written on Trayvon Martin, and when I got the actual toxicology, and then you see that these folks were just lying. They were misleading the public. There was a case right now that recently happened. Sarah Circle Bear, a Native American woman, died in a jail, I think in South Dakota, July the 5th. And they said that she died because of a methamphetamine overdose. It is really difficult to die from a methamphetamine overdose. I find that hard to believe, but I've been trying to get the toxicology and I can't because they say they won't release it. But this district attorney said that she died because of methamphetamine toxicity, which is hard to believe. But this irresponsible behavior is allowed to be to continue to be paraded in our country, and these guys get to walk around as if they are representative of the American people. And that's the thing that I find abhorrent.
And so all of these issues go back to this mistaken notion that is not really based on the scientific evidence that you and others have pointed out year after year. It's based on this notion that drug use can impact your behavior greatly, turn you into a criminal, can be passed down to your baby if you're pregnant, et cetera. How can the public educate themselves about the real impacts of drug and the real role, the sort of realistic and science-based role that drugs play in our bodies?
Well, one of the things that I did, I wrote my book recently, High Price, and that was aimed at the public to be a relative accessible book with some of these science, many of these science facts. And so I wrote the book to communicate with the general public. I have a website, drcarhart.com. I try and put out information that's accessible to people. I'm trying my best. There are a number of other people out here doing the same sort of thing. So if the public, I really hope the public reaches out and reads some of this stuff.
I want to thank you so much, Dr. Hart, for all the work you do and for spending this time with us today.
Thank you for having me on Uprising Radio. It's a beautiful title, and it reminds me of the Bob Marley album, as you know, I'm sure, Uprising. And so
Thank
more
you.
power to you, sister. Keep doing your thing.
Thank you so much. Dr. Carl Hart is an associate professor of psychology at the Department of Psychology and Psychiatry at the University of Columbia. His book is called High Price: A Neuroscientist's Journey to Self-Discovery That Challenges Everything You Know About Drugs and Society.